All right, so how's our crowd looking tonight? A little bit. Not too bad. We're so scattered. Well, why is it that we're like that? Everybody can't get up and get close to each other? That's a pipe dream, huh? We have never. Churches have tried to do that for years and just can't get that done. Anyway, so we're studying Gideon. And if you were here last week, I think most of you were, that we have now, of course, you remember from last week's study that Gideon has had his faith renewed and strengthened by the sign of the fleece and that situation. So he gathered 35,000 men, and the problem is they were going up against 135,000. And so they would have been, from a human standpoint, outmatched with regard to that. And you would think, because God's arranging all of this, he is God's deliverer, that somehow God would increase the number of men that they had, but instead he reduces the number. And you remember, how did he do that? What was the first test that Gideon was to give these 32,000 men? What did he say to them? Right. If you're afraid and trembling, then go home and do it in a hurry. And to my surprise, 22,000 of them went back. And I wouldn't have thought that it would have been that many. Remember, they all answered the call of Gideon to come out to this thing and to participate in this battle to set Israel free. But as it turns out, 22,000 of them really didn't have the heart for it. And so they go back. And so now all of a sudden it's 10,000 against 135,000. And you think, boy, now that's just a problem. What does God do? He reduces the number again. And this time he has them go down to the spring of Herod. And you remember he said, whoever laps like a dog. And what that meant was to get water, to cup it in their hand and then lap it like a dog. You put to one side and everyone else who just sticks their head down into the water, not their whole head, of course, but, you know, just gets down there and drinks. Their eyes would be pointed down towards the water, towards the spring. And whoever does that, you set to the other side. And so, as it turns out, 300 of them lap like dogs. And God told Gideon, these are the men I'm going to give you to overcome the Midianites and save you from their oppression. And so now we're down to 300 men. And so it's 300 against 135,000. Like, when you think about that, you know that's an impossibility. From a human standpoint, there is no way that 300 men could defeat an army of 135,000. Like, that would literally be impossible. And someone said, well, didn't you see the movie 300? No, but the fact of the matter is that they didn't even, those Spartans didn't win anything, did they? They just held the Persians back for a while. And, of course, that was just a movie, and they you know, didn't stick to all the facts. There were really probably 7,000 men instead of 300. But, I mean, it was still a great victory, and they showed their courage and all of that, and they go down in history as being these brave individuals. But that's 7,000. And they still couldn't do anything but hold the Persians back. And so you think about 300. And that's impossible. How can 300 men defeat an army of 135,000? And then you're not even taking into consideration that the Israelites weren't these trained soldiers that had all kind of experience in warfare. They just weren't. They were soldiers and they were men of valor and all of that, but they didn't have the experience of the ones that they were going up against. So you got 300 outmatched individuals, and yet that's what God's going to use to set Israel free. And why did God do that? Right. So there's no doubt, as I've been saying, 300 just can't do this. It's impossible. So when they gain the victory, all glory will go to God. Everybody will know that it's the God of Israel who got them out of this oppression. And that's exactly why he's doing that. And he's doing it because man is susceptible to take too much upon himself And you know, we're prideful, and sometimes we praise ourselves, think too highly of ourselves because of accomplishments. Sometimes even with blessings that God has given us, talents that God has given us, we use them and we take the glory. And we forget about God, even physically, with the physical things we have, material possessions that we have. What, do anybody remember what he warned the Israelites about back in Deuteronomy? Deuteronomy chapter 8. What did Moses warn them about? When they find themselves living in goodly houses and all their crops are multiplied and all of that. Don't forget about the Lord. He's the one who has gotten you this wealth. So don't claim that it was you. And that was a real problem. And that's always been a problem with man. And it was back then. It is today. And so we can learn something from the story of Gideon. We have to make sure, no matter what talent or blessing you have and how you use it for the Lord, make sure you give God the glory. Without him, you're nothing. You'd have nothing without him. And so that's the good lesson we learn from all of this. But he cuts down the number. So they're now 300 against 135,000. And when you stop and think about it and look at the text, you really see Gideon growing in his faith. Now, again, as I've been saying, Gideon is a confusing character. Like, he's all over the place with, you know, his character and his faith, and it's strong sometimes and sometimes weak, and just, he's kind of like us, isn't he? He's a lot like us. And so we can really come to appreciate him. But he shows great faith here in that now he's down to 300, and he doesn't hesitate. He doesn't come, he doesn't ask for another sign or anything like that. He just goes back up and he tells the men, okay, you know, this is what we're going to do. God tells him, I'm going to use these 300 to save you from the Midianites. And he believes that. And that's that shows great faith. And not only that, but what about the 300? Like, can you imagine if you were one of these 300 and the number now has been dwindled down to just 300, and you realize now you're going to go out there and fight against 135,000? What would you be thinking? But they trust. Gideon, no doubt, told them God has promised he's going to save us, and they believe that. So we don't have any record of them trying to get out of it or anything like that. And so that's real saving faith right there. That's the kind of faith that can conquer, and that's the kind of faith that we need, because they don't hesitate. And yet, at the same time, Gideon is demonstrating faith, but his faith still is not perfect. Like, he's still a little bit shaky at times, because as it goes forward, we find God knows his heart, and so he says, listen, go down to the camp. Like, he wanted them to go right then. He said, I have given you the camp. And he said, you can go get it. But he said, if you're too afraid, then go down there with Purah, one of your servants, and listen. And he was going to providentially arrange for Gideon to hear something that would give him some strength and some courage. But those were his two options. Really, just go. I'm going to give it to you and go. But if you're too afraid to do that, then you do that. What did Gideon opt for? Option number two. He decided, we know, because he went down there with his servant, Purah, and because so obviously he was too afraid to just go down there and take the camp, even though God just told him, I'm going to give it to you. And again, you know, we don't want to overdo it and say too many things against Gideon here, because God gave him the options. God obviously knew his heart. But just saying, he took option two. And the fact of the matter is, what if he would have opted just to go down there with the 300 men? Would they have gained the victory? Would they have? Everybody say yes. Of course they would have. God had promised it. And so really the only thing that this little weakness did here, and his little fear to go down and check things out, is just delay the victory, is all it really did. Because he would have had the victory anyway. It wasn't of him, it was of God. And sometimes we, you know, we have a lack of faith and overcoming battles that we're in the world. And sometimes we don't trust enough. And if we just trust God and live by faith, we can overcome any obstacle. The victory is ours, but sometimes we hesitate. Sometimes we put trust in the wrong places. Sometimes ourselves, sometimes other people instead of God. All that does is delay the victory. If we just learn to walk by faith and trust God in our everyday lives, then things would be much better. And of course, that was the situation with Gideon. All what happened is he just delayed things. So he goes down to the camp with his servant there. And all of this is providence. Because think about, again, the Midianites and the Amalekites, they cover the land. Verse 12 tells us that they're like locusts over the land. And their camels can't even be numbered. And so they go down there, and this is kind of like high drama. You know, I mean, they're sneaking down. What's going to happen to them if they get caught? They're in trouble, aren't they? No doubt they would be executed if they did, or tortured or something. I mean, it wouldn't be good if they got caught. And so they're right up there at the outskirts of this camp, where all of their armed men are, the enemy is, and providentially, of all the places they could have ended up, they end up at exactly the place where a man happens to be, or he has had a dream that had to do with a barley cake tumbling down, and it says it hit the tent and flattened it. And you notice in the text it says the tent. It's not just a tent. It's the tent. And so in the dream, obviously, this is the tent of somebody, maybe the king or maybe the general or somebody, you know, that's very important to the battle. So, but it hits the tent and destroys it. And again, providentially, so a man is just telling one of the soldiers, just telling this to one of his comrades, and Gideon is there and overhears it. And because he again, of all the places they could have got down there at the Valley of Jezreel and been, they were right at the right place. You think God had anything to do with that? Of course. Of course he did. And it happens to be that his fellow soldier, who he tells the dream to, he has the interpretation. God gives him the interpretation of it and tells him this is nothing less than Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of God, and God has given the Midianites into his hand. And so that's the interpretation. And that terrifies the man who had the dream, terrified the man who had the interpretation. And it spread throughout the Midianite army. And now one thing you need to remember is that these people believed strongly. They were very religious, not in the way that is good, not in believing the one true and living God. But you remember the Athenians, Paul said, you're just so religious. So I think the King James says superstitious, but they served all these gods and they believed in those gods. Like they had a God for everything, but they believed in these gods and the gods were blessing them and giving them rain when they needed that. And when they had children, it was the God of fertility doing that. And they believed that just like you believe in the true God, they believed in the gods. As much as you believe the Bible is right and what's in the Bible is true, they believed the gods. And they believed in dreams that gods would give people and all of that. And so when they hear this dream, this guy has a dream, and then someone else gives the interpretation, we really have to think about this. This is going to happen. The gods have given the interpretation. And so they're now terrified. they now are wondering, man, how is this going to happen? We're going to lose the battle. We know it because it was seen in a dream. And so they're just terrified about it. Now they're in there. Now just keep in mind, now Gideon is on their mind, because it's the Lord and Gideon, the man of God, that's going to do it. So they can't get Gideon out of their head. I remember a couple of years ago, I can't even remember the participants in it, but it was after the World Series was won. I was listening to sports radio, and I think it was one of the pitchers. He was being interviewed, and it was a real good interview. He's happy and whatever because his team won. He won an important game, and I can't remember the details, but there was a guy on the other team that used to hit him real good. He'd get, I don't know how many home runs he had off of him. He just couldn't get him out. But in the World Series, he struck him out and, went to a long way into winning that particular game. And so, in an interview, you've won the World Series, you're a champ, you're feeling real good, and they're talking about that. And I remember him saying, he confessed. He said, yeah, whoever the guy was, he said, I confess to you, so-and-so was swimming around in my dome. That's pretty funny. Like, he was simply saying, that man was in my head, and I couldn't get him out. He'd strike out most people, but he just giving up home run after home run. He is all in my head. And that's exactly the way it was with these Midianites. Now they hear this dream. They got Gideon swimming around up in their dome. They're just thinking, when is this going to happen? How is it going to happen? And they're thinking about that. They're terrified about it. So keep that in mind. So Gideon then, he hears this, and that gives him, just like God said, that gives him strength. He realizes this is of God. God has given this interpretation, and he didn't ask for a sign, but it's another sign that God is going to give him the victory. And that now he knows that these Midianites and all the people, they're terrified now of him. So, he also, the record just said, it was kind of interesting that right then he worships God. Which teaches us a little bit something about worship, doesn't it? What does that tell you about worship? Like, what do you think Gideon, built an altar right there and offered up a sacrifice right fast? Right quick, you think he did that? They're right at the edge of the arm of the enemy. They're trying to be as quiet as they can. They can't get caught. So what did he do? He worshiped God. How do you think he worshiped God? Probably. Like, we're not, all it says, he worshiped God. But he probably just offered up a prayer of praise and was, thankful. That's worship, isn't it? You don't have to do anything elaborate to worship God. Of course, when we gather ourselves together, we worship in the God-designed way on the first day of the week and whenever we come together. But can you worship God at home? Right. Every time you pray, you're worshiping God. And we ought to be worshiping God on a regular basis. Just thanking you. When you just thank God, something happens and you give God praise and you thank him for whatever it is, you've just worshiped God. And that's a wonderful thing. We should be in the habit of doing that. God should be so on our mind that we're praising him all the time. Doesn't have to be a big elaborate thing that everybody's seeing and hearing and all of that. Just be you and God. You just uttering a few words to God. Thank you, God. And you praise God. And you've worshiped God. That's what Gideon did. Somehow, he sees all of this. He gets this, and he worships God. And then they go back up to the 300, and now he's ready to go. And so now he has a plan. And it doesn't say it specifically, but there's no doubt in my mind, anyway, that God gave him this plan. Like, I couldn't prove that, but the plan that he comes up with is such that no human being would ever devise such a thing. And so it adds again to the story that here is not only 300 men against 135,000, but how they're going to battle without sword, without shield, and gain the victory is really amazing. And the way they did it, most of you know, you've read the story, and they, of course, the first thing they're going to attack at night. It's going to be in the mid-watch. They divided their days into three watches at that ancient Israel did, at least. By the time the New Testament comes around and they're under Roman rule, it's four watches. But at this time, it was three. And the mid-watch would have been from 6 to from 10 to 2. And so it was night. It would have been night. And that was the plan. You know, you only have, you're outnumbered by a lot. It's probably good to attack at night rather than in broad daylight, isn't it? So he devises it, and he's going to divide his men into three camps, probably 100, three groups, probably 100 apiece. One would have 101, of course, with Gideon, and put them in a strategic place where they could see him. And then all they would have were three things. Who could tell me what they were? What's the first thing they would have? They'd have a trumpet, a torch, and a pitcher. And the only thing else they would have is their voice. And they're going to, with those three things, they were going to defeat an army of 135,000. And Gideon said, all you have to do is keep your eye on me and do what I tell you. Just follow me, what I do. And so when he blew his trumpet, they were to blow theirs. And, of course, he and the men, the hundred with him, would blow their trumpet, and then the other two groups would do the same thing. And now you just stop and think, it's night, and again, now the camp, it would appear as if they're surrounded. There's really only three groups in particular places, but the Midianites, remember, it's night. Most of them would be asleep. So the loud blast of 300 trumpets would wake them up. When you wake up just like that, how's your mind? You completely alert like me? No. You're sometimes, I wake up sometimes, I don't know, is it Sunday? Do I have to preach today? I'm confused. And anybody wake up and a little bit confused? Yeah, that's, you know, that's what happens. So these soldiers are woken by the loud trumpet sounds, and they're a little bit confused already. Then all of a sudden, Gideon throws down the pitcher and with 100 other men, and then the other 200 men do the same thing. How loud of a sound would that make? 300 pitchers all crashing down at the ground at the same time. It'd be a pretty loud sound. And so now all of a sudden they would be rattled. Remember, who's swimming around up in their dome? Gideon. And then all of a sudden they hear 300, they don't know it's 300, but the voice of 300 people shouting, "The Lord and Gideon." Some translations add the sword, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And when they hear that, they would completely fall apart. Like they're just waiting. When is Gideon going to attack? How is he going to attack? The dream said he's going to gain the victory. He's going to beat us. And all of a sudden, they see this trumpet sound. And by the way, a trumpet sound, generally, at wartime and things, that was a sound that, you know, to go, to attack. So they're woken up out of their sleep by a trumpet sound, and the first things that soldiers would think is, we're under attack. Then they hear the crash, and then they hear a shout of Gideon's name. And they just fall all apart. Look at what happens, and it's very interesting the way it's put. At verse 22, it says, and when they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set every man's sword against his comrade and against all the army. And the army fled. And so now you could take that in a couple of different ways. You can you can conclude that God somehow did that supernaturally, and maybe it's so. Or that God has done that through all of these events. As I said a few moments ago, this really had to be God's plan. Like, how would Gideon think of this, to attack these Midianites, if he was just left on his own with the promise of God that he'd make it so that they are the victors? You know, he probably wouldn't have thought, okay, I know exactly how I'm going to do it. I'll do it with a trumpet, with a pitcher, and a torch. What we're going to do. No, God, I'm convinced anyway, God gave him that plan. So it was, and it's through all of that that caused this great terror to come upon them. It's not the only time. Get out your concordance and look. God had made the same promise at different times to Israel, that their enemies would see their backside, that he would bring terror upon their enemy. And that's what God has done here. He doesn't necessarily have to act directly and supernaturally, you know, fill their minds with fear. It's all the events that he has put in place. But one way or the other, you might take, you know, I wouldn't be mad at you if you took the position it was supernatural. But whatever, we now know, though, that the army, these 135,000, they're terrified to the point where they start turning on each other. And remember, this is a group made up of different kinds of people that would even speak different language. They could have had a shared language, but they basically would have the Midianites and the Amalekites would speak, their language wouldn't be exactly the same. And so wouldn't that add to a confusion when now what do you think would happen with all this noise going on to all the camels? Remember, there's a bunch of camels there that can't be numbered. Think they're just sitting there. It's all chaos. That's the picture. The camels would be all excitable and there'd be confusion. And now they're turning on each other. Fight each other. And it because of all that chaos and confusion and the terror and the excitement and all of that, the Israelites have no problem. Really, the only thing that is left to do, now they begin to flee, and all they have to do is pursue them and mop up the situation. And who would have thought it? 300 men causing that kind of chaos. 135,000 soldiers defeated just like that. When God is on your side, it's remarkable what can happen. Nobody would ever thought anything like that would happen. The Midianites would be shocked by the whole thing. Remember, for 7 years, they've had their way with the Israelites. They've been too terrified even to fight. All of a sudden, they're up against a small group of us. Probably why they didn't. They probably knew that the Israelites were there because, you know, like just like the Israelites could see them. You know, they probably knew something was going on. Something was different than what was taking place the last 7 years. But if they did, the numbers would be so small, we're not worried about them until they are, and it's too late. And so they flee, and it says the army fled as far as Bethshitta towards Sierra, as far as the border of Abel-Meholah by Tabath. And the men of Israel were called out from Naphtali, from Asher, and from all Manasseh, and they pursued pursued after Midian. And so now it's just about capturing them. And then it says that Gideon sent messengers throughout all the hill country of Ephraim, saying, come down against the Midianites and capture the waters against them. And so he calls some others to come and help them out. These other obviously tribes of Israel. And he says again, as far as Beth-Bera and also the Jordan, so that all of the men of Ephraim were called out, and they captured the waters as far as Beth Bera, and also the Jordan. And they captured the two princes of Midian, Oreb and Zeeb. They killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb, and Zeeb they killed at the wine press of Zeeb. And they and then they pursued Midian. And this is interesting. They brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon across the Jordan. You know, I mean, we're not used to that sort of thing. You know, I mean, we see all the time, you know, how brutal like terrorists are and that sort of thing. And Taliban and all those guys and cutting off heads and things like that. And it shocks us, doesn't it? And it should. Like we're, you know, civilized society, that should shock anyone. But that was common. And even here, you know, with the Israelites, it's just amazing. So they catch these guys, and what do? Cut their head off, bring them back to Gideon. Look, Gideon, like, you know, things are just, I mean, we live in just a small part of the globe. Things are a lot different in most parts of the world than it is where we live. And we ought to thank God where we live, because not a whole lot has changed in these countries and places in the Middle East and the places. Anyway, so we find that the Midianites are defeated and the Israelites are rescued from their oppression. And we read further, they end up having rest for the next 40 years. And so what are the things we learn then from this? It's really just a very interesting story of Gideon and how all of that played out. We've already talked about some of the things we can learn. Not to take too much upon ourselves. That is certainly one thing that we should learn. Another good lesson I didn't read the text, but in there somewhere, I can't remember what verse it is even. You might recognize it when I say it, where I just saw it. Verse 21 says, and every man stood in his place around the camp, and all the army ran. So a lot of sermons have been preached on that over the years. That was very important. If they were going to pull this off with 300 men and cause the chaos that they did and cause them to be frightened, they had to do exactly what Gideon said and at the right time, and they had to stay right there, stand in their place to make it work. And they did that. So, you know, that statement and phrase, a lot of sermons that we need to stand in our place. Elders need to stand in their place, oversee the flock like they should. And, you know, making tough decisions. That's the hard work to be an elder. I think we appreciate our elders here. I hear brethren praying for them all the time, and I believe we do, and we should. We should keep doing that, because we need elders like the ones we have. They're going to stand for the truth and just stand in their place. And we need husbands and wives that are going to stand in their place. And I don't have time to preach a sermon to you, but you can see how many examples you can get. Preachers need to stand in their place and do the work of an evangelist and preach the word and so on. And just Christians as a whole, members of a local congregation, we need to stand in our place. How do we do that? By participating, being involved, doing our part. Every part needs to supply to the edification, the edifying of the body. And so we need to be just like those 300 men who stood in their place and did what they were supposed to do and gained a great victory. We also learned through the story of God's patience. I mean, what a patient God he is. How patient has he been with Gideon? And as I said in the very beginning, he brought him from this man we first met who was terrified to the point that he was thrashing the wheat in a wine press, doing everything he could to stay away from the Midianites, to this man who now led just 300 men to a great victory. And now, next week, we'll see just a little bit that there's a few more bumps in the road for Gideon. And I confess to you, as you get into chapter 8, there's a lot of different ways you can view Gideon. And people do, like commentaries. There's a large schism between what they believe. And some, as we read chapter 8, some believe that Gideon just really demonstrated, I don't know exactly what to call it, but a disposition that certainly wasn't God-given. A man of revenge and some bitterness, meanness even, where other people think that he was really just doing the work of the Lord that God had given him to do. But towards the end of the chapter, we'll see, and again, we'll talk in more detail about it next week, but we'll see that after all of this transpires, that the people basically want to make him a king. And he's going to turn it down. And he's going to say, no, you have the Lord to rule over you. And that was a good thing, a great thing. But as it turns out, he turned down the kingship, but he sort of behaved like a king. Like, you know, it's one of those things like in word, no, not going to do that. I'm not going to serve you. My sons aren't going to serve you. Just the Lord is the one who's ruling over you. But then he did some things that thought, there's been a little change again in Gideon. And that's why I said earlier, the bell's about to ring, so we'll go through chapter 8 rather quickly. We'll probably get into Jephthah next week as well. But we just see Gideon like he's just all over the place as a man in his character and his faith and his godliness. And sometimes you wonder about him. And as I said, that's pretty much us. Like we're strong sometimes, and then sometimes we feel weak, and sometimes we are weak. And sometimes we stand for the Lord, and sometimes we fail to do so. And it just, I mean, we're a lot like Gideon. But you know what? We learn again, God is a patient God. He's patient with Gideon, and he's patient with us. And we should thank God for that. Because do we need his patience? Absolutely, we do. And so thank God for that. All right, I don't want to get into the next chapter. I think he's about to ring the bell, or did he already? But you're about to? Yeah, go ahead and ring it. I owe you guys some minutes anyway. Oh, man, I won't be here. You know what? I won't be teaching for a long time.